on Education and Natural Resources. It's Monday, June 6th, and it's still raining. And we're here today for a work session on House Bill 5142, which is the budget bill for the Oregon Department of Education. I'll open a work session on House Bill 5142. Ms. McGlash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You should have received last week in your inboxes a copy of the memo and the Orbitz report that we'll be going over today. For those of you who didn't bring those with you, I have provided extra copies, however. So, Madam Chair, I guess I would ask you how you would like to proceed, if you want me to just go through the entire memo, or if you want to go over each individual package and take a motion on the packages for what you've been doing.
What I think would be good would be, if you don't mind, to start with the performance measures, and let's get those.
Those were distributed to you last week as well, but under separate cover. I think I didn't have those at the time that I distributed your memos, and so you should have those. Hopefully you have those with you. If not, I can get you.
I don't have them. I left them up there.
Okay.
It's going to be useful. Are you have copies? There's another set.
There we go.
So, members, you might recall from the, if you were on the Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee on Education, you might recall that when we had the discussion about performance measures in phase one, the department talked about how they were undergoing a revision of all of their performance measures, taking another look at them, and would be coming forward with proposed performance measures, and they've done that in the handout that you received. And if you've had a chance to go through that document, you'll notice that there are not targets for 06 and 07 established for these performance measures, and that's one of the things that should be included in the report, the performance measure report for an agency. So you have a couple of options. You could discuss with the agency the work that they've done to date and then provide any input on those performance measures in terms of adding to them or modifying them, deleting them, and then also discuss establishing targets for the agency for 06 and 07. As an alternative, you may want to simply direct the agency to work with DAS and LFO on the measures and the targets, and that would include the progress board if appropriate, and then report to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee during the interim. And if you do that, what I would recommend is that you have them report at least initially no later than March 1st of 06, because they'll probably need to do some more work as a result of appearing before JLAC, and we want to make sure things were final within an appropriate time period so that the agency would be able to get everything into their annual performance progress report, which is due around September of 06.
Ms. McGlash, in the discussions in the phase one and phase two of the agency's budget with the joint process, was there discussions? There seems to be a fair amount of attention paid here to the progress that students are making through the K-12 system. What were the discussions around the agency's relationship with the OUS system and the community college system and the pre-K system and the ESD system?
Madam Chair, you're really challenging me at this point to think that far back and in that level of detail. I don't recall any specific, and I'll ask the agency to correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't recall any specific discussions about the higher ed system and the community college system in relation to the department's performance measures. There was some discussion, obviously, about ESDs and school districts and the types of performance measures that exist currently, such as student assessment scores, and I believe perhaps, you know, the extent to which the department can or cannot influence that type of performance measure.
Good morning. Vicki Fleming, Deputy Superintendent from the Department of Education. We've had several conversations in several venues about pre-K through 20 performance measures. The most recently was Friday when the Joint Boards of Education met on Friday afternoon out at the Viticulture Center. When we started the smart budgeting process way back last fall, we did create a conceptual pre-K through 20 set of performance measures that would measure everything from early childhood to the workforce system, to the community college system, and to the university system. That has not been a continuum that has been asked for, or in fact, we haven't really been directed to revisit that. I believe that is the intent of the Joint Boards of Education in their work, that as we go forward over the next biennium and the interim to look at the policy work that they are doing, which is really to create that seamless continuum, that a set of performance measures that leads you from early childhood through post-baccalaureate would be the intent of that work. In this matrix that you have, Representative Morgan, you mentioned, there are two sections to these performance measures. The first section we list as the things that we report on behalf of others, or the enterprise, if you will, the 198 districts and 20 ESDs, and those would be the higher level measures related to student achievement. The shaded section, which starts with a line that says we report on behalf of the Oregon Department of Education, are the result of the strategic work that we've been doing over the last year to zero in on what it is that the agency does that contributes to the outcomes of the enterprise and that we need to be paying attention to in terms of our own agency improvement efforts. And so this is by no means the sum total or the entirety of all the things that the department is responsible for reporting progress on. We have much more information than this, both related to student achievement and to the system. But these are the things that we felt we would like to advance for approval to the Oregon Progress Board as approved performance measures that we believe if we track these things over time that we will in fact be able to tell you whether or not we're doing our job well or not. So that's the difference.
And I think just somewhat of an editorial comment, I think that you've done a really good job of getting to the nut of the issues on how students are progressing through the system. I like the performance measures that I see that relate to that. But I am concerned that I think a great deal of energy is being put right now, and justifiably so, on the continuum between the K-12 system and the community college system and the four-year system, and the whole more, better, faster concept that was discussed a great deal over the interim about how you move those 11th and 12th graders through the higher ed piece as expeditiously and seamlessly as it's possible to do. And I would like to see the development of some kind of measures that would be in all of those three arenas that would move or that would measure the progress on that front, because I think that that's one of the areas in the whole education arena where there is a lot of low-hanging fruit that can make the system operate more efficiently, but that everybody's got to have a reason to be at the table and try to make it work.
Representative Morgan, I absolutely agree. I think the closest that we come in this set that you have before you is if you look at performance measure number 9, you see it's percentage of high school students earning credits for advanced coursework. The assumption behind that is if you are taking advanced coursework, you are more likely to be college ready to complete your high school education and be able to have access to dual credit or accelerated opportunities. And there are probably other measures that we could agree to as a system that would be outside of the approved performance measures of the.
Would this also be a performance measure that could be used to measure the effectiveness of the computer system that kind of bridges that gap?
The data system is mentioned specifically in the section around the agency's work. Let me see if I can find it. It's mentioned in several places, actually. Performance measure 26, deliverables met on the project schedule to develop a statewide integrated data system. Since we're in the development mode right now and we're just getting off the ground with it and we have no assurance that we'll be able to continue that investment over time. The what we want to be able to commit to in the progress board context is that we're on time to meet the deliverables in the plan. But yes, in answer to your question, absolutely. We would need data system to inform that vertical connection of student outcomes from K-12 to community college to university system, and that is the intent of the design of that system.
Representative Shaw.
Thank you. Right there on that number 9, do these kids, and I'm glad they're capable of taking these courses that go towards their college education and their credits there at community college or university, do they pay for that extra out of their pocket, or is that part of the K-12 budget?
Representative Morgan, Representative Shoffler, yes and no. It depends on the relationship that the K-12 district has often between the community college or the university, either statewide or in its jurisdiction, and there are a variety of ways that happens.
Sure. I saw in the news this weekend that a principal in Colorado, due to the rising cost of community college and college, has withheld some high school graduates' diplomas. And because if they don't have a diploma, the state's still on the hook for their continuing education. And 100 poor kids are going to go on to community college. And their K-12 budget is going to pay for that. Now, the state's up in arms over all that for obvious reasons. But could that be done here, too?
Representative Morgan, Representative Shoffler, that is a can of worms
that is
being discussed in the context of Senate Bill 300. I don't know if that bill is actually going to make it through the gauntlet or not. But, in fact, we have districts who are piloting a variety of ways of providing more better faster and more better slower. And the question behind, I think, your question is really about the money. Does the money stay in the system? Can you get a free college education out of the state school fund or not?
May I just follow up, Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'm good at opening cans of worms. And when they say it ain't about the money, it's about the money. So thank you, Madam Chair, for indulging me.
Representative Johnson, you look like you're wanting to say something.
I have some questions, but I'm not sure that we're through with this particular... these particular performance measures, and I'm patient, I can wait.
Okay, no, please go ahead.
I'm concerned. I think it's admirable to have goals and performance measures about these particular students. And the concern I have is, I guess, having to do with number 7/OBM 22. I'm not sure I understand exactly what we're doing with that. But the dropout rate. I guess my concern about this, the goal is to measure the rate that students drop out of school. And you know, that's fine, that's a good goal. However, it seems to me that the way that has historically been done is very misleading. And school and agency flattering statistic. The real measure that I'm concerned about is the number of students leaving the eighth grade that fail to graduate. That's the dropout rate. It's not the 4.9%, if that's the right percent. If 4.9% were the dropout rate, then we would have, in my simplistic way of looking at the world, something like 94.1% of the students graduating from high school, which we don't come close to. And I'd like to see a more realistic performance measure there, and that is the measure from leaving grade 8 to graduating. It's a longitudinal, I understand, but And that's my soapbox on performance measures for right now.
Representative March, you were part of the formative discussions in Phase 1 or 2. I'd be interested if you would give me your thoughts on the performance measures.
Well, obviously, they've been measuring the Oregon benchmark ones for some time in context of the Oregon benchmarks. And I think, as you pointed out, that's their sort of their standout area. I do agree we need to work on that integrated system of how people transition, and I'm tracking the university and community college work. I think is very important. One thing that I didn't catch in here, not all students are going to go on to community college or on to higher ed, and at some point, somewhere, it would be interesting to see if we're also getting people into apprenticeship programs or things like that. And some of those will be done through the community colleges, and some of them will be done outside of the education system. But as part of the junior and senior years, some of the students are going out and doing internships and with businesses and things like that. And maybe there's something around that the department or the joint boards of education can look at. Because we have a complete society here, and not some people are going to choose different tracks.
Representative Krieger, do you have any thoughts on the performance measures?
Well, I looked at them, especially before we got down to the ones with the grade. It would seem that all the numbers that would be generated by this, probably the agency actually has. They just have to pull it together and put it into a performance measure like we've seen typical with other agencies, where you see a percentage of what they intend to try to improve and goal. Then you can readily look and see if we're actually making headway in education. Looking at it in this form, it's a want and something we should be looking to do, but you can't see it over time. So I think it will have benefit over time.
Committee members, or Representative Shepard.
This is a relatively easy request, but I think I would like one line on here that says exactly how much we spend on any given year on K-12 or community colleges. Just the one number you can all get, because it varies depending on who you ask, and it's difficult to nail this down. And I know my good friends Representative Kopp and Esquivel are working on this, and I want you to help me help you by getting those numbers and dialing them in and not come back and say, well, we forgot about this or we left that in. You know what? The average person, now I represent, I think, the average labor Joe, is just really frustrated when we can't tell them exactly what it is. And I know maybe this is an impossible request because it's growing so huge, but that's something, it's a simple number. How much do we spend on any given year? And I know you'd probably have to wait 2 years to get 2 years back because it's constantly moving. But I think I should be able to go back to 2003 and say we spent $9 billion on it, K-12, in Oregon in that year. I don't think that's an unreasonable request, Madam Chair.
I think that sometimes the things that appear to be simple turn out to be incredibly complex. I think there's a number of us that are still trying to get our hands around this. Committee members, what I'm hearing is I think that the discussion around the performance measures kind of points out that they're not finished, that there needs to be more work on them. And I'm wondering if you would be amenable to having the whole issue around performance measures be moved into the Joint Legislative Audit Committee so that we can continue that discussion in the interim in a more reasoned way. And I think that is also a good platform to have a cross-departmental discussion that's pretty difficult in this budget environment.
I was waiting for you to finish, Madam Chair.
Oh, that was it?
One of the other issues that I have raised somewhat consistently, I think, with the agency is the issue of declining performance from via the assessments that we have, from the third grade assessments to the 10th grade assessments. I have a lot of heartburn about that when we look at third grade assessments, and excuse me, the numbers are kind of off the wall, but at 85% achieving at third grade level, we look at, you know, fifth grade achieving at 67%, and so on up the line. We get to 10th grade and they're achieving at something like minus 12%. And I understand that the tests become more difficult. I mean, that we would assume they should become more difficult as they progress through school, but the student's ability to deal with more difficult material shouldn't necessarily decline as we move through the system. I'd like to see some efforts made on the part of the Department of Education to reverse that trend, to change that trend, to get at the bottom of the issues I've heard as an excuse for it. Generally don't hold up as far as, at least I'm concerned, they may in other areas, but I have real difficulty, you know. It seems to me like we put a lot of effort into our early, you know, our little kids seem to be doing really quite well, and the further they go, the more behind they get. And that does bother me. I'd like to see it the other way around. Or I'd like to see them at least be able to maintain some constancy with that. So thank you, Madam Chair, for another one of my pet peeves on performance measures.
Representative Shaw.
Thank you. I'm trying to stay away from education in my 3 years in this building, but here I am. I'd much rather build America. It's far less emotional and controversial. Anyway, I think on what my friend here said about young children, I really honestly believe, and this is purely my own opinion, I think 85% of children are born geniuses, and we, and I mean everybody, screws them up, their parents included. Are there any numbers out there that show, that reflect the achievement relative to a person's social and economic status or position from neighborhood to neighborhood, district to district? Because I think we'll find, I mean, my little girl, and I'm editorializing here, Madam Chair, but forgive me, my little girl has two reasons for her, for me to believe she's going to be a success. And one of them is me, but the real one is her mother, who is constantly tutoring and helping, and she has a degree in education and a doctorate. But now the kids that we say, little kids, I'm sure the reason they're doing well, in my opinion, is they got these brilliant little sponge-like minds that they respond quickly and eagerly, and oftentimes maybe because this is the best part of the day is being in school. I can't believe that these dwindling numbers, as they get older and turn into little idiots like I was when I was a teenager, reflect where they come from and what kind of help they're getting at home. And eventually, if I were a school teacher, I would be honest with you, I wouldn't have spent a lot of time with me. I would have spent time on kids that I thought I was going to get something out of. So I don't know how you measure that. There has to be some truth to that, and I don't know if we can put it in a performance measure, Madam Chair.
Well, and very subjective. Those are the kinds of discussions that are best had in a kind of a thoughtful, not rushed atmosphere,
right,
like the one that we have right here.
Right, yes.
And so I'm hopeful that I could get somebody to make a motion that directs the agency to work with the Department of Administrative Services and the Legislative Fiscal Office on the targets, and then present its version or its final version of the performance measures with the targets to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee during the upcoming interim for the committee's review and approval. The agency would report initially to the committee no later than March 1st, 2006, to ensure that adequate time is allowed for adoption of the measures and the targets prior to the deadline for the agency's annual performance progress report, which is in late 2006.
So moved.
Do you want me to repeat that word for word?
Yeah. I have the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection? That motion carries.
Just a comment regarding that issue. I had two grandchildren in my home since November, a year last November, so I've had a year and a half. And it was taking us an hour and a half, 2 hours a night to help them through their homework because the job of teaching isn't getting done in the classroom. Period. I talk to all the parents that are doing that, and they say the same thing. And the kids that are not getting that home help by the single mom or dad who just can't possibly, you know, take care of the family and do the dishes and the laundry and do their children in the evening. So I have a concern why kids in the fourth and fifth grade have got an hour and a half to 2 hours of homework a night. I didn't. But yet it's not getting done in the classroom, and those that are not getting that help from the parents are just like that. And I've talked to the teachers about it. They know which ones, and a couple of them are teachers helping their own kids.
I'm not going to argue with my good friend, but my little girl loves the school atmosphere. And we were at private school for over 4 years, and we went to Happy Valley, and she said the other day couldn't believe the school year was already over, and she's going to miss Mr. Cook, and they've done a great job. But I think we put more demand on kids than we did when I was in fourth grade.
Teacher. And mama, their dad, their social worker, their district attorney, and their soldier, a shoulder to cry on because of our family situation. 30-some% of my kids are out of single-parent homes.
It's true.
So it's not the teacher's fault. In my opinion, anyway, it's just the thing we have.
Committee members, I was hoping to be able to move this budget today, and we're getting into some pretty philosophical, policy-oriented issues here that really aren't germane to the budget discussion. So I'm going to reel you all back in here and turn it back to Ms. McGlashan to take us through the budget in the correct order.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I realize this might not be as exciting as the discussions you've been having, so I'll try to get through this fairly quickly. And my apologies to the department. They found that statement offensive. As I mentioned earlier, I distributed a memo to you last week, and if you'll just turn your attention to that memo now, I'll just walk you through it. It just starts out with a summary of the department's budget. The first part just tells you a little bit about the governor's recommended budget for the Department of Education and how the funds sources have increased or decreased since 2003-2005. And then there's a table that also goes back to 1999-2001 to give you some more budget history. And you can see that, especially in the general fund, the budget has not grown. It has actually declined about $10 million from 99-01. Other funding sources have increased so that the overall budget has increased from 99-01, however. And the staffing level has also decreased from 99-01. There's a paragraph on that first page that also summarizes for you specific recommendations to implement the House budget plan, and I'll get into more detail about those when we go through the Orbitz worksheet. And I think with that, Madam Chair, members, I'd ask you to turn your attention to that worksheet. And you'll notice that the first page is not page number one, it's page number three. And the reason for that is this, as you know, this agency's budget includes the state school fund, but we're not dealing with that today. And so I left that part of the Orbitz report out. And so we're just going.
I thought you ran these off on the day when the coffee machine worked.
We've had days like that, Madam Chair, but that's not why in this particular case. So, so there is, in the Orbitz report, there's not a summary of the department's budget units for you And so if you're looking for those numbers, that would be on page 1 of the memo. So I just wanted to point that out. So on page 3 of 16 in the Orbitz report, we'll start with the department of, the department's operations budget unit. And the first package for your review and approval is package 090. And this is a package that reduces the agency's budget by $1.1 million total funds in the governor's recommended budget, and it includes reductions for the Smart Buy program savings, and that's about $71,000, not a huge amount out of the total package. The biggest piece is a $2.7 million general fund reduction to meet targets in the governor's recommended budget, and the package also eliminates 6 positions and 6 FTE. And then it adds some federal funds expenditure limitation to align with what were expected revenues at that time. So the LFO recommendation for this package is to approve it, but as modified for the PERS adjustment as a result of the rate going from 15.52% to 14.63%. So that would give you a total package. It would reduce the general fund by $2,694,379, other funds reduction of $48,491, and a federal funds limitation increase of $1,613,083 for a total package reduction. Total package that reduces our budget by $1,129,787, and again, 6 positions and 6 FTE.
Questions or comments from the committee on the LFO recommendation to package 090? I would accept a motion to accept the LFO recommendation to package 090. Would someone say so moved? Is there discussion on the motion? Objection to the motion? Hearing no objection, the motion is carried.
You were just looking right instead of left.
Ms. McGlash.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The next package is package 095. This is called the Scenic Participating Agency package, and you may have heard about the Scenic Project. The Department of Education is one of 12 participating agencies for this project, and this is simply a placeholder package to recognize that. There's really no budgetary impact other than it moves a dollar of general fund from personal services to services and supplies. So I would just recommend that you approve the package and just acknowledge that the 12 participating agencies, including the Department of Education and their respective budget adjustments, will be addressed in a separate bill this session. So you won't see it in the individual agencies' budgets.
Discussion or questions on the LFO recommendation to package 095? I have a motion to accept the LFO recommendation to package 095. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Without objection, the motion is carried.
And then on page 4, at the top of the spreadsheet is package 102. This is a pre-K-12 integrated data system package. You might also have heard this referred to as a pre-K-16 integrated data system, because there are also components in the community colleges budget and the higher ed budget that are related to this. And this would provide $1,800,000 and one position, a half FTE, for the department for integration of various data among ODE and community colleges and higher ed, as well as between school districts, ESDs, and ODE. And the recommendation is to remove this package from the department's budget and then establish a special purpose appropriation in the emergency fund, and then direct the agency to come to the emergency board with a detailed budget for the project and then an update on where they are in the proposed project. And at that time, they can also ask for position authority if they need it.
Representative Schaffer.
Madam Chair, is this a, forgive me for not knowing, but is this a new, something new, or, okay, and we're just not, we're going to do it through the e-board item this week to get more information. And what does this do exactly? Well, it's integrated data system.
Madam Chair.
I'd like the agency to come forward.
Representative Schaffler, that is one of the questions, what the project would actually do. We have some general information on it, and we would just like to have more detailed information as well as on the proposed budget for the package.
Ms. Fleming.
Representative Morgan, Representative Schaffler, we are in phase one of building a system that will both allow us to transmit data from district to district electronically, which we cannot currently do. If a student moves from one district to another, they often are, there's a records request for hard copy of a folder somewhere, and often it takes weeks for that to get there. So the first phase is that building of a system or the business requirements of a system that would allow us to do that horizontal transmission of data. The second, the reason that there are portions of this budget in the post-secondary system are that we want not only the horizontal transmittal of data from district to district, but the ability to transmit from the high school to the post-secondary institution information that the student needs so that they don't end up having to fill out paperwork and transcripts are transmitted electronically, et cetera. So over time, we have the ability to go up through the system with information and around the system with information. Obviously, it's much more complicated than that. We now have student-level information about every child in Oregon, and that means that the building of a system to keep track of that data is very complex. We have in Oregon multiple data centers out there managing this information and transmitting it both to us and to each other. What we'd like to do is consolidate that and have a more disciplined, more centralized way of managing. So this project is not in its entirety that different from the Scenic project, where in state government we're trying to figure out how to consolidate our technical infrastructure so we don't have redundant systems out there costing you money three and four times over, but rather we have a very clear way of managing that information and the technology behind it.
Follow up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do all school districts right now have all the kids' records on computer? And if some do, for example, North Clackamas, if I emailed Mr. Stewart, the principal there, right now from this building and asked for my girl's information, is he capable of emailing that information to me right now?
Representative Morgan, Representative Schaffler, it depends on what you ask for, I believe. We have a fairly rigorous set of privacy requirements that restrict that transmission of individual information about students. In North Clackamas, they have a system called Mastery in Motion, which they have had in place for quite some time, which allows them to work with data around student achievement and provide that to the teacher to inform their instruction in the classroom. I'm not sure, from where I sit, what North Clackamas gives to parents.
One more question, Madam Chair. So what this system will do is make everybody the same this way from North Clackamas to Portland School District, and going this way from North Clackamas up to OHSU. I imagine they'd be included in it.
Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler, ultimately yes, and it's not a short-term proposition. It's at least a five-year phased-in building of this approach, being able to hit the button and transmit electronically student information. Yes.
Representative Schaffler, the discussion at the co-chair's level, there was a concern expressed that this was still very conceptual, and that is the reason for the special purpose appropriation to the e-board. So this money is in the venue of the e-board with an earmark on it for this project, but the co-chairs were very interested in having all of the component people that were involved in this reporting on the architecture of it and the outcomes and the timelines and the costs in a much more finite way than is available right now.
Thank you.
Representative March.
We had quite a bit of discussion around the concept in the community colleges and workforce development budget in the Ways and Means sub, and as well as the OUS budget. And K through 12, as I see it, I mean, it's sort of like standardizing information. If one school district reports the school child's number and then grade and then classes taken in a certain manner, and then the next district does it the opposite way, does the courses and then the student, it would make sense to standardize it so it can be transferred. We have foster children who have to transfer from district to district, under a court order. It will speed up that transmittal, as well as, like we were talking about earlier, a student taking at North Clackamas, maybe also taking some Clackamas Community College coursework, and that being integrated into their records so that they can immediately apply to Clackamas Community College or some other college, all electronically. Then it'll reduce paperwork, and that's the goal. And it'll be a seamless, smooth system.
Thank you.
I would accept a motion to move the LFO recommendation to package 102.
So moved.
Is there discussion on the motion? Objection? Without objection, the motion is carried.
Then, members, the next package is package 108, and this is called agency reorganization. And if you were here last session, you might have heard about the reorganization that the department was undertaking under the new superintendent. And this package simply puts the finishing touches on that reorganization. It lines the budget up with what they are currently doing. In other words, it adjusts certain expenditure categories. And it's essentially cost neutral. You can see there's a very small impact to general fund and federal funds and then some savings and other funds. While you don't see this in the worksheet, there has been an adjustment for the PERS rate reduction, and so LFO recommends that you approve the package as modified for that.
Questions or comments on the LFO recommendation? I'll take a motion to accept the LFO recommendation to package 108.
Mm-hmm.
Discussion? Objection? Without objection, the motion is carried.
And then, members, the next package is package 801, and that's called LFO Analyst Adjustments. This is a package that adjusts the remaining portions of the operations budget if not already done in a policy package earlier for the PERS rate reduction, adjusts the budget for the Attorney General hourly rate reduction. It also aligns other funds and federal funds with expected revenues for 05-07, and then restores with no general fund impact 1.5 FTE, which should not have been taken in the governor's budget, but were, and so this simply adds those positions back. And you can see that there is an expected decrease in the federal funds for the agency, and so the limitation has been decreased in this package, and there is an expected increase in other funds available to the agency, and that there has been an increase in the other funds limitation in this package. So the package would reduce general fund by $137,973, increase other funds limitation by roughly $2.5 million, and then decrease federal funds limitation by $403,749 for a total package of $1,996,662 and one position and 1.5 FTE.
Questions or comments on the LFO recommendation to package 801? Representative Jackson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I see in the staff summary, page 1, in relationship to $100,000 general fund for the SMART program, but nowhere in the packages, do I see any reference being made to that? Where does that show up, if I may ask?
Madam Chair and Representative Jensen, this agency has several budget units, one of which is the grant and aid budget unit, and that's where we will have the discussion about the SMART program, and that's
where
we'll lay some
further questions or comments on the LFO recommendation to package 801? I would accept a motion to approve the LFO recommendation to package 801. Discussion? Objection? Without objection, the motion is carried.
And then, members, package 811 is called the Special Budget Committee Adjustments 1 package. And this would decrease the agency's general fund by $3 million. This is to implement the House budget plan. This is an unspecified reduction. There is some possibility the agency may be able to find some other funds or federal funds to offset some of this reduction, but that's not known yet, and so we don't really have a lot of detail right now as to how the agency would implement this reduction, but it is part of the House budget plan.
Questions or comments on the LFO recommendation to package 811? I would accept a motion to approve the LFO recommendation.
So made.
I have the motion. Is there a discussion on the motion?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Is there some reason we couldn't increase that to 5?
We couldn't what?
Increase that to 5 million.
Increase that to 5 million? That was not called for in the co-chair budget.
I understand that.
I will take it as an editorial comment.
Okay.
Is there objection to moving the LFO recommendation to package 811? Without objection, the motion is carried.
And just to wrap up that section, members, you'll see that the adjustments to the governor's budget would provide roughly $31.1 million general fund for the agency for its operations unit, and this is an 11.9% reduction from the 03-05 legislatively approved budget. It would provide $9.4 million, almost $9.5 million, other funds expenditure limitation. This is actually a pretty substantial increase from 03-05, and then federal funds, it would provide $42 million in federal funds limitation, and this is a slight increase from 03-05. The total funds budget would be $87.5 million, and so the total budget increases about 2.3% from 03-05, and positions are actually reduced from 03-05, and the budget would provide 258 positions and 255.2 FTE, which is also a slight reduction from 03-05 levels.
Let's go on to special schedules.
Okay, so special schedules start on page 6 of 16. There's not a lot in this budget. There are no, there are policy packages, but none from the agency. The first package is package 090, and this is the analyst adjustments package, and this just reduces the budget for the estimated smart buy savings. Pretty small reduction to general fund, $108, would reduce other funds expenditure limitation by $6,506 and federal funds by $23. Total funds reduction is $6,637, and LFO recommends that you approve the package.
Questions or comments on package 090 for special schools? I would accept a motion to move the LFO recommendation. Discussion? Objections? Motion carried.
And the final package for special schools is the package 801 LFO analyst adjustments, and this reduces the budget for the PERS rate reduction and the Attorney General hourly rate reduction, and also aligns federal funds limitation with expected revenue. So the package would reduce the special schools budget by $88,926 general funds, $9,817 other funds expenditure limitation, $353,037 federal funds expenditure limitation, for a total reduction of $451,780. Dollars total funds.
Discussion on the LFO recommendation to package 801 for special schools. I would accept a motion to move the LFO recommendation. Discussion? Objection? Without objection, motion carries.
And again, just to summarize, members, that would provide $16,997,830 general fund for the special schools budget, and that's about a 2.4% increase over 03-05. $3,003,000 for other funds expenditure limitation, an increase of about 6.6 over 03-05, and then federal funds expenditure limitation of $368,413. It's actually a pretty substantial decrease from 03-05, based on, again, expected revenues for the program. Total funds budget is $20,682,509, so the total funds increase only by about 1% over 03-05. And then the positions are 191 and FTE 156.8, and those are both slight reductions from the 03-05 levels. And then if you
head to youth corrections,
if you'll turn to page 8, This is for the Youth Corrections Educational Program. Again, no agency proposed policy packages, but there are two package 090 analyst adjustments. This would reduce the budget for the estimated SMART by savings, not a lot, but some $77 other funds. It also adjusts the budget to reflect the governor's funding level for the state school fund, which supports this program. And LFO's recommendation is that you approve the package just as it is, so it's based on the $5 billion budget that the governor proposed in his budget. And so your approval would be with the understanding that the agency would probably have to come back during the interim to request from the emergency board additional limitation once the final state school fund figure is known. And at that time, the agency can provide updated caseload data for the program when it reports to the emergency board.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you tell me what all is the Youth Corrections Education Program?
Thank you. I'd like to hear that too.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, this program supports educational services to youths who are in the close custody facilities like McLaren and Hillcrest, and they contract with the local educational agencies, school districts, ESDs, I believe, to provide the staff for those programs, so they don't really run the programs directly.
What about county programs?
Madam Chair, they provide some funding to youths who are in the county detention programs.
Some funding means what?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair and Representative Jensen. The population, I believe, is limited to 320. Look real quick. The average daily membership is limited to 350, so that's as much as
money as is available.
The fund,
based on
they can only fund that amount of average daily membership. In other words,
we know what the N is out there for this.
I don't have that with me. I don't know if the department knows.
Representative Morgan and Representative Jensen, we can get you the exact numbers of students that are involved in both juvenile detention and youth corrections. I don't have it with me this morning.
Follow-up, Representative Jensen?
Yeah, it seems to me that that's probably a fairly small number for the actual number that are out there. And as a consequence, I'm wondering who's picking up the tab for the education, or if the education is not taking place. Well, and I may be wrong on the number. Yeah. It may be an adequate number, but it seems to me that it's a small number.
I can tell you, Madam Chair and Representative Jensen, that we look at the close custody population forecast that come out of or that are done for OYA, and that the population forecast projected more in population for 0507 than the beds funded in the governor's budget for the Oregon Youth Authority. Those beds were funded at 850. So there is a difference there.
I'm getting a nodding of I'm getting body language from the and I'm not sure what it's meaning.
Madam Chair, Representative Jensen, I'm not sure whether you're asking about the juvenile detention population or the youth corrections population.
No, I'm talking about the county,
We have a mandate to provide educational services to that population, no matter whether they are in a juvenile detention facility or in a youth correction facility. So we are responsible at the department for managing some of those juvenile detention programs. School districts provide various alternatives for depending on the adjudication and the responsibility for who those kids belong to. They have various transition classrooms, etc. So there's a continuum and a variety of ways that education gets provided to that population, some of which we're responsible for and some of which the districts are. So if you'd like more...
Madam Chair, it would seem to me that at least I'm talking about a facility in Pendleton, which is about the only one that I have any knowledge at all about. But it seems to me that the actual responsibility for the funding of those should come out of the districts where those young people come from. If they come from Pendleton to the Homestead facility, then the 16R ought to be picking up. If they come from Harrison, then 6J ought to be picking up. But apparently that is not totally what takes place.
Madam Chair, Representative Jensen, that's another can of worms. And I think we have a budget note that's going to help help us get at some of the work.
That would be... I'd hate to have the right side of this thing be... opening cans of worms be confined solely to Representative Schaffler. So,
well, I think that's part of our job, and I think that the budget note is a good platform to have that discussion on. This is an issue that's been going now for a couple of years and needs a resolution.
Yeah, okay. And I, and it's because of that, my knowledge of that, that I'm bringing that up, Madam Chair. Thank you.
I'm going to ask for a motion to accept the LFO recommendation to, I believe we're on package 090.
Correct.
I have the motion. Is there a discussion on the motion? Objection? Without objection, the motion carries. Ms. McGlash.
And members, the next package for the Youth Corrections Educational Program is Package 801, LFO Analyst Adjustments, and this simply reduces the budget for the PERS rate reduction and the Attorney General hourly rate reduction, and then aligns federal funds expenditure limitation with expected revenues. So this would decrease the budget by $18,334 other funds expenditure limitation, and by $400,274 federal funds expenditure limitation, for a total reduction of $418,608. And no positions, no FTE.
Discussion around the LFO recommendation to package 801 in youth corrections. I have a motion to accept the recommendation. Discussion? Objections? Without objection, the motion carries.
Just to wrap up that section, members, the legislative budget for the Youth Corrections Educational Program would be $24.4 million other funds, $2.5 million federal funds, for a total budget of $26.8 million. This is about a 9.3% increase over 03-05, and it'll probably be even higher yet because of their request for additional limitation from the emergency board, should that happen. It probably will.
Let's move ahead to grant need.
The next, on page 10 of 16, members, is the beginning of the grant need budget unit, and... starting with package 090, this is a package in the governor's budget that was put together to meet budget targets. It reduced various grant and aid programs to maintenance of effort levels. It eliminated funding for the Frontier Learning Network and the Student Leadership Centers, added $100,000 for the Smart Reading Program, and then reduced funding for the Oregon Pre-Kindergarten Program by $11 million. And you probably... heard that this reduces the number of eligible children served from roughly 60% this biennium to about 53% in the next biennium. Per the House budget plan, the LFO recommendation is to restore 100% of the state funding for the Frontier Learning Network, and that's $667,128 general fund. Restore 100% of the funding for the Student Leadership Center, and that's $736,688 general fund. Restore $6 million to the Oregon Pre-Kindergarten Program and reduce funding for the SMART Program by $100,000. So that would adjust the package by $7,303,816. So the total package would be a reduction of $7,219,199. There's a slight increase in other funds expenditure limitation in this package of $12,532, and then a substantial increase in the federal funds other federal funds expenditure limitation by $95.6 million, and this was based on estimates of federal revenues for 2005-07 at the time the governor's budget was put together. Also, an increase of $51.3 million in non-limited federal funds for the nutrition programs, again, based on expected activity, for a total funds package of $139.6 million.
Committee members, with reference to the LFO recommendation on this package, we have, through much pressure, some gentle, some not, had the co-chair give us permission to reduce the $100,000 or to reverse the $100,000 cut to the Smart Reading Program and restore the funding to that program. And so I would ask for a motion that accepts the LFO recommendation but amends it to reverse the $100,000 cut to the Smart Reading Program.
So moved.
Discussion on the motion? Objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried.
So, Madam Chair, just to clarify, that will add $7,403,816 back to this package. And then package 801 is the LFO analyst adjustments package, and this is a package that adjusts federal funds expenditure limitation to projected revenues. When the governor's budget was put together, there were some estimates put together for 2005-06 and then 2006-07, I believe, is simply increased by 3%. It was expected that the federal revenues would grow by that much. More recent estimates from the U.S. Department of Education indicate that there's been a decline in the amount of federal revenues that can be expected for Oregon, although I will point out that they are still estimates in many cases, and so the numbers may change yet again. So this package would reduce the federal funds expenditure limitation and non-limited federal funds in recognition of the most recent estimates from U.S. Department of Education and U.S. Department of Agriculture. So this would reduce the federal funds expenditure limitation by $66.4 million and the non-limited federal funds by $15.3 million for a total funds reduction of $81.8 million.
Discussion on the LFO recommendation to package 801. Objection to the package. Without objection, the recommendation carries.
And then the final package for grant and aid is package 811, and this is called Special Budget Committee Adjustments 1. And this simply takes the funding for the 2005-07 projected caseload growth in the early intervention, early childhood special education program and essentially transfers it to the emergency fund. So it would reduce the agency's budget by this much, and then there would be established a special purpose appropriation in the emergency fund, and this would be pending updated caseload and federal funds information from the agency, and there is a related budget note pertaining to this package there.
And this would be the third biennium that this appropriation has been done this
year? Madam Chair, I believe it's at least the third, possibly the fourth, where we've taken the caseload money and put it in the emergency fund pending updated information from the agency because of the difficulty sometimes in projecting the caseload growth. And in fact, while since the program's inception, there's been pretty consistent growth year over year. In 2003-04, I believe it was, there was actually a drop in caseload growth. And so you can see that sometimes it's not easy to know what's going to happen.
Representative Schultz.
I'm sure, I don't know what this program does. Does it find out if a child has a learning disability or what goes on here?
Madam Chair and Representative Schaufler, it is a program. There are actually two components to it. The early intervention component serves children birth through age two, and then the early childhood special education program serves children three to school age, and it is designed to help children who have disabilities or developmental delays that might result in a disability that would then hamper them in school and their ability to do well in school. So it's pretty much what the, you know, what it's called. It's early intervention, and it's designed to catch those things early and give the kids the best possible start before they get to school.
We're asking them to come with updated information before we let this money out.
And it just, the information that we want to have is the most recent projections about how many students are going to be enrolled in the programs.
And if I could point out, Madam Chair and Representative Schaffler, this is just a very small piece of that program's funding. When we get into the recommended bill amendments, you'll see that there is $84.7 million in general fund that would be directly appropriated to the department for the program.
Any other questions concerning the LFO recommendation to package 811 and grant an aid? I would accept a motion to accept the recommendation. Is there discussion on the motion? Objection? Without objection, the motion is carried.
And again, just to wrap up that budget unit, that provides $186.7 million in general fund to the grant and aid programs, $14.7 million in other funds expenditure limitation, $688.5 million in federal funds expenditure limitation, and $227.9 non-limited federal funds for a total funds budget of $1,117,727,473. There are no positions or full-time equivalents associated with this budget unit.
Representative March.
Yes, I had a question. When we did the adjustment on package 090 replacing back $6 million to the Oregon Pre-K program, does that put us back to serving roughly 60%? Or no, it puts us at 50, probably 6 or 7?
Representative March, I think it buys about another 2% or so. Okay. So it would put you at 55, 56%. Yeah, it depends on some of the assumptions that you make as to the funding per slot, whether you want to try to meet 90% of what the feds pay per slot or 85%. And
so they've got,
but in that ballpark. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move on to debt service.
And Chair and members of the subcommittee, the final program unit is called debt service costs. And you might recall, if you're on Ways and Means, the discussion about this program unit in, I think it was the spring of 99 and then the 90, let me check real quick.
97,
99. I think, yeah, 97, 99, and 99, 01. There was a total of $277 million issued in lottery bonds, and these were intended to be for the acquisition or construction, remodeling, maintenance, repair of school facilities. Schools could also use the bond proceeds for certain operational expenses like textbooks and computers, instructional training. So this is simply the debt service on those bonds, and it's about close to $60 million a biennium, and the primary source is from lottery funds. So the budget would provide $56.9 million expenditure limitation and lottery funds, and then other funds. Those funds primarily are interest earnings on debt service related accounts like reserve accounts. The budget would provide $1.7 million other funds expenditure limitation for a total funds budget of $58.7 million. And LFO recommends that you approve this budget unit.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have nothing to do with our approval of this, just a question. Where's that debt at now? How far are we away from where we got left?
Madam Chair and Representative Jensen, that question came up during Ways and Means, and there was a schedule prepared and distributed to members, and I don't have it with me. I don't know if anybody from the department has that with them. I think it's maybe 12, 15 years out is my recollection, but we can get that for you.
That for you. That's fine, Madam Chair. I guess editorial point on
there's
it,
plenty of room for editorializing on this.
Yeah. Generally, when we take on debt service, we anticipate life expectancy beyond, or at least equal to, or beyond the life of the debt. I expect some of the computer hardware has already been replaced.
Well, I don't imagine there are a lot of those original textbook purchases that
are still around.
Actually, unfortunately, some of the textbooks probably are still
around. We have that debt, and there's no question on my mind as to what we have to do with that. So I'm comfortable with the package and what we have to do, just making note that while it seemed the expedient thing to do at the time, I still have some concern about using bonds to pay for the groceries, if you wish. But having so said, Madam Chair, no negative thing about anybody or anything on this, just my own personal value system.
I would accept a motion to approve the LFO recommendation to the debt services costs for the Department of Education. This is your discussion. Objection. Without objection, motion is carried.
And then, members, if you'll turn back to the memo, we can talk about the recommended bill amendments. And you're probably aware that the bill that's before you, House Bill 5142, is actually what we call a blank appropriations bill. And so the recommendation is for the amendments to the bill are actually somewhat conceptual in nature. And I'll just take you through them. The recommendation is that you add language that would appropriate general fund, establish lottery funds expenditure limitation, other funds and federal funds expenditure limitation as follows. And these numbers, by the way, are the same numbers that you... They better be the same numbers that you've seen. They are the same numbers that you've seen in the Orbit spreadsheets. So you're just implementing what you've just found.
With the exception of the conceptual amendment.
On SMART. That's correct. Thank you, Madam Chair. So the general fund appropriation for operations would be $31,126,129. For special schools, $16,997,830. And then for grant and aid, now, in the Orbitz budget report, you didn't see these specifically broken out, but this is the way that we've done it for as long as I've been here, where the programs have their separate appropriations. And so I recommend that you continue that practice. So for grant and aid, it would be for the following programs. Early intervention and early childhood special education programs, $84,732,417. Regional programs, $30,832,573. Educating children with disabilities in hospital programs, $1,527,083. Educating children with disabilities in long-term care treatment programs, $17,665,484. Oregon pre-kindergarten program, $49,868,304. Student leadership centers, $736,688. Connectivity grants, $600,000. Frontier Learning Network, $667,128. And the Summer Food Service Programs, $50,176. And then I would add the Smart Reading Program, $100,000 general fund.
Proceed.
Okay. And then the lottery funds expenditure limitation for debt service, $56,929,095. And then for other funds expenditure limitations, $9,451,398 for operations, $3,316,266 for special schools, $24,361,796 for youth corrections educational program, $14,744,661 for grant aid, and then $1,731,375 for debt service. On the following page, federal funds expenditure limitations, $42,038,013 for operations, $368,413 for special schools, and $2,462,907 for the youth corrections educational program. And then, again, you didn't see this broken out in the Orbit spreadsheets, but for certain federal programs, we've broken out the expenditure limitation just to provide a little bit more accountability for these specific programs. So for grant and aid, for federal funds expenditure limitations, it would be the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, $248,212,674. Title I-A grants to local educational agencies, $247,142,256. Title I-C migrant education, $25,564,947. Title II-A teacher quality, $55,585,911. Vocational education, $15,743,566. And all other federal programs, $96,197,930. Then the bill would also include two special purpose appropriations in the emergency fund. That would be the $4,893,114 general fund for the early intervention, early childhood special education program, and $1,800,000 general fund for the pre-K to 12 integrated data systems project. And then the bill would have the standard language that it typically has for non-limited expenditures from various sources, the largest of those sources being the federal funds from the U.S. Department of Agriculture for the nutrition programs.
Okay. Do you think it would be appropriate at this point to move these amendments into the bill so we can kind of get a handle on them, or do you think we should do them all at once?
Madam Chair, could you clarify, move them as opposed to
all these number amendments, and we're now going to go into budget notes, essentially, that we could just move the
amendments
relating to funding levels
into the bill. That's what I would do.
I would accept a motion to approve the LFO recommendation for funding levels for general fund appropriations, lottery fund expenditure limitation, other fund expenditure limitation, federal fund expenditure limitation, and to establish two special purpose appropriations in the emergency fund, as well as conceptually amend the general fund appropriation to reflect a $100,000 appropriation for the smart reading program into House Bill 5142. Is there discussion on the motion? Objection.
Madam Chair, I will not be objecting, but there's a lot of moving parts here, and I will not be objecting. I reserve my right in the full and on the floor, though, because if new information comes to me that hasn't been presented in this very expedient process, I just have to be careful. And I just wanted to make that comment. Thank you.
Understood. If that could, I register you as a yes vote on this.
Yeah, I'm not objecting. And you can put me down as a yes.
Any other objections? Without objection, then the motion carries.
Okay, so members,
we've already done performance.
Right. Measures. So that takes us to item number 4 on page 4, budget notes. So there have been 4 budget notes proposed for the agency, and the process still requires that the chairs of the House and Senate budget committees approve the budget notes before they can go forward, and all 4 of these budget notes have been approved. So the first one has to do with the early intervention, early childhood special education program, and this is essentially identical to the budget note from previous sessions where the department is directed to report to the emergency board by a certain date, in this case no later than April 2006, on the status of the program, and that would include the number of eligible children served in the program, the actual caseload growth to date in 05-06, the first year of next biennium, the projected caseload for the remainder of the biennium, and then the amount of additional federal funding available for the program, if any, including federal funds from the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act and Medicaid funds, and then at that time they may request all or part of the special purpose appropriation if needed for caseload increases.
So discussion on the proposed budget note? Okay, let's move ahead.
Then the second budget note has to do with the special schools, and this would be a cost effectiveness review. The department would be directed to provide just a report to the interim education committees as well as to the emergency board during 05-07 on the cost effectiveness of possibly transferring the program at the Oregon School for the Blind to the Oregon School for the Deaf campus. And this would also include the cost effectiveness of contracting out the two programs to a local education agency and get the Department of Education out of the role of running these schools. And for those of you, actually, I'm not sure there was that much discussion during the Joint Ways and Means process on the special schools, but they have quite a bit of deferred maintenance at the campuses. There appears to be some, the Oregon School for the Deaf campus is actually a fairly large campus, and it just seems like it's time to look at if there are savings from combining the two programs, and also this would possibly, combining the two programs would let there be a focus on one campus and getting that deferred maintenance taken care of and things kept up. So it would simply be a report, and it would be up to an interim committee to possibly introduce any needed legislation or even the legislature itself next session to take it up as a policy issue.
Representative March.
Thank you. I wanted to put on the record, because this, I know this idea has come up a couple of times. The communication issue of the deaf and the blind are extremely opposite. The deaf communicate visually with their hands. The blind, orally, except for a very, very small minority of deafblind who do tactile. And the thought of combining students that communicate orally and students that only communicate visually is one that I think would present a lot of learning problems and interaction problems. I think the concept of maybe looking at the cost effectiveness of contracting out something like that has more promise for cost effectiveness than the concept of putting these two populations together, if that's the concept here, because they just don't mix.
Madam Chair, if I could clarify, I don't believe the idea is to put the two populations together. I believe the idea is because the campus at the Oregon School for the Deaf is as large as it is, you could actually have the two schools separate but on the same campus, and the agency might want to come up and talk a little bit about that. But I don't believe there's the idea of actually having the populations combined, because I think for the very reasons that you're stating, those are a concern.
Madam Chair, Representative March, absolutely right. We would not want to disrupt the integrity of those instructional environments in the least, but rather to simply look at the physical environment that they're both in and represent to you whether or not there is an ability to do it, a willingness to do it, and a cost savings in doing it, and then have you help us with that decision.
Thank you.
Representative Jensen.
For the record, I would like to concur with my good colleague from Mount Hebron District, and note that any change would be something that I would look at with look at very carefully in any future legislation. I have some constituents who came to Oregon, professionally moved to Oregon because of the, and this has been a few years ago, but because of the school for the blind there, and it would cause, in my case, a lot of heartburn if we did not continue to take care of that school, which provides a valuable service to people far less fortunate than we are.
I would concur with both Representative March and Representative Jensen's comments. I think that the body would be not amenable to implementing recommendations that would lower the level of service to these populations. These are extremely vulnerable people who benefit greatly from these programs, and these are wonderful programs. So I would trust that the work group is going to go forward from that platform, and I think that there is a good reason to take a look at this and see if there are efficiencies that can be gained. But I think it's also clear that we aren't going to be interested in efficiencies that are gained at the expense of the quality of the programs.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Let's go ahead and do the youth corrections.
Okay. Members of the subcommittee, the third budget note would direct the department to work with the Oregon Youth Authority regarding the educational needs, and this includes the post-secondary needs of the youth who are served through the Youth Corrections Educational Program. And this would include taking certain actions and reporting recommendations to the State Board of Education, the Interim Education Committees, and the Emergency Board by April 2006. And that would, those activities would include getting together a representative stakeholder group and gathering information from that stakeholder group, and the group would include individuals interested in working in the area of youth corrections, and then recommending funding options to address educational services for incarcerated youth who are between the ages of 19 to 25 and have already achieved a regular high school diploma.
Questions or comments on the proposed budget report or budget note?
Madam Chair, I know we're moving along, but it's a request of the department to show me how, in reference to Representative Jensen's question about, like, Parrot Creek, for example, I think that's a county, how that budget stuff works out. And I know there's not a performance measure in here, but how, I would like to find out, not now, but how successful are we are with these young people? My brothers and I walked the razor's edge, and we were anything but angelic, and I got friends that were in reform school, went to prison, and, you know, I mean, they're still my friends, but I'm very interested in that for personal matters and governmental matters, too. So.
Let's go ahead and do ESL.
And the final budget note, members, is a report on the use of English as a second language programs. And the department, this is actually, I think, the third time the department has received this budget note. And, again, there's interest in having the Department of Education reviewing and reporting on how English as a second language funds defined by a certain area in the statutes are being allocated to and expended for English language learner programs and other special programs supporting exclusively English language learners, again, as required by a certain area of the statutes in each school district in the state of Oregon, and the department would report its findings by January 2007 to the State Board of Education and the Education Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Discussion? Okay. Oh, Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thing I would be content in not disagreeing with the budget note here. The concern I would have is what data the department has now and can provide the Education Subcommittee, Joint Ways and Means in the interim, on the effectiveness of the benefits of, or call it whatever term we want to use, for these English as a second language programs. What are we getting for our buck? Is it
We wrestled with this one, and Ms. McGlashan, could you talk to Representative Jensen about where we're hoping to go?
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Jensen, I think there are two pieces, and again, the department might need to step up here. But in terms of the funding for the programs, they should be able to get that off of the database initiative project component of the department, and I'm sure they have other sources as well to gather how those funds are allocated through the formula and how they're expended at the district level. And then in terms of the effectiveness of the program, you'll see if you look back to your performance measures, there's a performance measure number 10, which is the percentage of English language learner students making progress in English proficiency. And that would be, I assume, you know, the main way they would report to you on the effectiveness of the programs.
That's correct, Madam Chair. Representative Jensen, for your record, I'm Pat Burke, the Chief Policy Officer at the Department. In response to this budget note, during the current biennium, we did collect information for the first time on the number of students identified as limited English proficient, the amount of money received under the funding formula, the allocation reported by districts. As you know, it's a weighted funding formula, not a spending formula, so we looked at what the districts reported as their expense and what results they achieved. That report is on our website and has been distributed fairly widely around the state. As a next step, this budget note would direct us to continue to go deeper into that work, to look specifically at the types of programs that students are receiving and the effect of those programs. So in the last biennium, with the addition of the secured student identifier system, we were able to track individual students and look specifically at the impact of those programs. This budget note directs us to go deeper.
And I thank you, Madam Chair, and that is obviously what I'm interested with, and it's certainly in no way thought is in no way a criticism of the English as a second language program, but simply to look at what kind of results we're having to evaluate what we are getting for the money and whether or not we need to look in some other areas and in some other directions, for this particular target population. I would like to see more than just in their English use of English assessment that they might have, but I'd like to see also the assessments of other substantive areas that people have, theoretically at least, if you are proficient in English, there should be some, if you've gone in your proficiency in English, there should be some increase in perhaps your mathematical, your science or whatever other courses that one would have, since English is the general vehicle that we use to teach in those other areas. So absolutely, anything and everything the department can do in this regard, I think, will be necessary for us as we continue in this legislative body to, look at this area. And I appreciate the department's work very much on this. Thank you.
Representative Shaw.
Thank you. My dad, he didn't speak a word of English until he was five, went to kindergarten. He spoke German on the farm, as did all his neighbors. And then he was immersed in English. Are we, and then World War II came along, and they're actually discouraged from speaking German for obvious reasons. Are these kids immersed in English when they go into school? How do you, and maybe that's a question to be later answered later, but, my dad learned to speak proper English, and I don't know, what are we doing, what did they do different then than they're doing now? I guess as a rhetorical, wide open questions.
Could I make a quick shot?
Well,
at that?
Representative Schalker, we have a couple of things to do, and we're already over the time. So if you could have that conversation separately with the department, I would much appreciate it.
You're welcome. I'd be happy to talk to the representative about that.
Thank you. The committee members, that completes the budget notes, the proposed budget note. I would like to propose an amendment to the budget itself that says none of the funds appropriated herein may be used to adopt or implement a standard of cultural competence, cultural diversity, as proposed in the Cultural Competence Summit Report of May 2004. Funds appropriated herein may only be used to develop a proposed definition of cultural competency, cultural diversity. No funds shall be used to implement any cultural competency program unless specifically appropriated for that purpose. The intent of this amendment is to prevent the adoption or application of any cultural competence standard unless and until the legislature has considered that standard and given its approval. And I would offer that as a conceptual amendment.
We don't have a copy of that.
What?
Do we have a copy of that? Oh, no, that's
if I could just clarify, did you want to have a motion made on the budget notes?
We could do that.
First, well, and then I'll get copies.
Okay, well, and I'll do the motion. I would accept a motion to move the budget notes as recommended in the LFO memo to House Bill 5142 into House Bill 5142. Is there discussion? Objection? Without objection, the motion is carried. Now, we're just relaxed.
We're standing at ease.
We're standing at ease.
I met him. Oh, okay. Oppose this on a number of grounds, but one, I believe it's a policy question that is not appropriate for the budget bill, and I would hope that we would get a legislative council opinion to that effect. Secondly, I sat on both the Education Ways and Means Subcommittee on Education and the Education Policy Committee. And this subject was not brought to either committee. And I believe it would be much more appropriate for it to have been brought to the Education Policy Committee. In fact, there was a Senate bill dealing with this subject that was not given a hearing. So I don't think this is an appropriate amendment to the budget bill.
Any comments on the amendment? Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I will support the amendment that you brought forth, Madam Chair, but I would be remiss if I didn't express my concern. And one of the questions I do have, and I haven't looked this up, and I should perhaps have taken the time to do it over the weekend, but I really felt that I didn't want to spend my weekend looking at statute. I'm a little curious at where we get with the ORSs in relationship to this. But having made that observation and expressing my concern about it, I will be supporting you on moving this forward.
Thank you. Representative Shaw.
Madam Chair, I won't be objecting today either, so you can put me down as a yes now. This whole thing, I mean, you just read this, defining cultural competency. I mean, Bertrand Russell and all those guys that went running around philosophically trying to define all kinds of stuff. And I don't know if we can, whether it be policy, no matter how much we appropriate, I don't know what we're doing here. So I reserve my right to vote no on the floor, because I really don't know what we're trying to do here, to be quite frank with you, or what we're, I don't understand what we're not appropriating money to. Well, I guess with reservation, we'll not oppose it today, but I don't know what we're really doing, not appropriating money for, to be quite frank with you.
I would accept a motion to amend House Bill 5142 with the conceptual amendment that has been presented.
So made.
I have the motion. I have discussed the motion. We have an objection to the motion. With that objection noted, the motion is carried. And with that, I would accept a motion to move House Bill 5142 as amended and conceptually amended to the full Ways and Means Committee, to the Special Committee on Budget, with a due pass recommendation. I have the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Representative March.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And one, I would like to thank you for at least providing this in writing this time, so it's clear that this is an amendment to the budget, as opposed to the last time when it was kind of mumbled through and I didn't it was not clear that it was an amendment to the budget. So thank you for making it clear. That aside, I will have to object to the motion, not only because of this policy addition to the budget, which I think is inappropriate, I do have some concerns about the Oregon Pre-K program. I had hoped that we would be able to fully fund it, as our folks across the on the other side of the building have done, and back up to the 60%. And so with those objections, I'll be a no.
Thank you. Further discussion?
Madam Chair, the same thing. Same thing I said before. I will not object today, but I reserve my right in full on.
Further discussion? With Representative March's objection noted, are there any other objections? With that objection noted, the motion is carried. Close the work session on House Bill 5142 and adjourn the committee.